This is Ana Ojes Castro Guzan, co-founder of Your Words STL, and you're listening to the Gift of Words podcast mini-series. Your Words STL is a 501c3 nonprofit that uses tutoring, creative writing workshops, and collaborative projects to help amplify the voices of marginalized youth. We are committed to bridging racial, cultural, and socioeconomic divides by honing the ability of people to tell their stories while providing opportunities for the community to listen. This podcast is hosted by Michelle Haberberger, Development Manager of Your Words STL.
This interview is part of our hashtag Gift of Words Giving Tuesday campaign and lecture series. We are interviewing experts in fields closely tied to the mission and vision of Your Words STL. And that being said, I'm very excited to welcome our guest for this episode, Dr. Treasure Shields Redmond. How are you today?
Hello, I am doing quite well, and I hope you are too.
Yeah, I mean, like the weather, you know, I'm here in South City in St. Louis, and it's been like really drippy and rainy. And normally, like, my, you know, adolescent angsty heart loves this kind of stuff. But my husband is in Florida right now, and he's been sending me all these pictures of like beaches, just him frolicking in the surf and the sunshine. And I'm just like, ugh.
I hear you. Yeah, my daughter and I are actually taking a trip to East Africa in just a bit.
Wow.
And I'm really excited about tropical weather.
So are you the kind where you like this kind of like dreary? I feel like you're a poet, right? So like, is this like, does this pull at your poet heartstrings, or are you just like, get me out of here, I need tropical weather?
No, I don't really like dreary weather. I find it depressing. Yeah. I like rain, especially when it's sunny and it rains.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. But the whole dark, overcast, mist in the air, I keep trying to explain to my daughter who really wants to go to England that the movies we see are all shot on the like 3 days that mm-hmm. <I'm dying. laughs> But eventually we'll get there, but I'm not a fan of dreary cold weather. No.
How did you two, I'm assuming it was, did you two come to the decision to go to Africa together? And like, what's taking you there? How did that happen?
Well, my daughter's only 13.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm in charge of the decision making and all.
Right. Of course. Oh yeah.
But here recently, I've been in contact with some really dynamic Africans who build libraries on the continent. One young woman who has something closer to what I might create in West Africa, which is a library of diasporic literature, and it's also a performance space and a reading space.
Wow.
I've been in contact with a Ghanaian woman who builds libraries in rural spaces. I've been in contact with an African-American woman who was a professor at UT Knoxville, whose dissertation was about information science on the continent of Africa. So with the way that I've been raised to, you know, love and appreciate Black literature and my own research into it, I'm really seriously visioning opening a library and performance space on the continent. So this trip is about seeing how possible that can be.
Wow. So I have roughly 30 questions to ask as follow-ups, but before we go there, I feel like we need to back up for just a second. Talk a little bit about, like, we just dove right into it, right? Going from like dreary weather to like, I'm opening a library in Africa. Okay, I need to ask you all the questions, but first, can you introduce yourself? Who are you and what is your connection? What is your connection to YWSTL?
Yes. Well, my name is Treasure Shields Redmond. I am a dual citizen of Meridian, Mississippi and East St. Louis, Illinois. My mother is from Meridian, Mississippi, and my father is from East St. Louis, Illinois. They were never married, but they committed to co-parenting me. So after their relationship ended, my primary home was in Mississippi. But I would come up to East St. Louis, Illinois, and over to St. Louis for summers and holidays. My mother also has a sister that lives in the St. Louis metropolitan. Mm-hmm. I was educated first at an HBCU in Mississippi called Jackson State University. And then I went on to really kind of own my writerly self, earning an MFA in creative writing from the University of Memphis. And here recently, I completed a PhD in English literature and criticism.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a long road and I'm glad it's over. But how am I connected to YWSTL? Well, I think that the founder, Anna, and I actually met over a shared Cave Canem Kundaman connection. Cave Canem is a really prestigious organization for Black American poets, and Kundaman is a really prestigious organization for Asian American poets. And I think we connected over that at a reading or something like that, maybe through a mutual poet friend. But eventually, Anna invited me to assist with the mission of her fantastic nonprofit, which, began in the wake of the murder of Michael Brown.
Right.
And, you know, we shared, you know, so many connections with poetry, being women of color, having MFAs, and also being kind of rocked and moved by the murder of Michael Brown.
Yeah, she identifies you as one of her heroes for many reasons. So I'm listening to just your brief introduction and beginning to understand why. You've been involved with the organization as a teaching artist, right? I think I saw your name a couple times come up when it came to our Crossing Del Mar kiddos and their podcasting.
Yeah, that was a really cool project.
What did you do for those kids?
Well, in the Crossing Del Mar project, it paired kids from the Riverview School District, which is predominantly African American in St. Louis, and kids from New City School, which is pretty diverse, but compared to Riverview, would not be predominantly African-American. And both of these communities exist kind of on either side of a street called Del Mar in St. Louis, which represents a real fault line for class. The differences are stark. Like, you can literally be right on the other side of Del Mar and your housing price can drop by $200,000.
Right.
So these kids, their collaboration is part of what us adults are trying to do to bridge that divide and hopefully eliminate it over time. And it was a way for them to collaborate, meet, exchange ideas, play games. My podcast friend and co-host of another podcast I do called Who Raised You, Jalian Yang, and I documented the kids and, you know, recorded them and created podcasts from some of the days that they collaborated.
And I listened to all of them as I was studying the Crossing Del Mar kind of results for like a qualitative analysis I was doing for Anna. And oh my gosh, those kids are so insightful and adorable. I cannot imagine what it was like to be there in person. There's just so, you could even hear it. It came across in the recordings how much energy was in that room.
They, I mean, you know, kids are our best example of what it is to be an open human being.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just joyful and curious and eager and expecting the best out of things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So let's back up a second. I like how you threw in there very casually, like, oh, one of my multiple podcasts. how many podcasts do you have?
Okay, so here's the thing with the podcast. Actually, you know, we talked about, I kind of mentioned earlier, you know, about being, as I said, rocked and moved by the murder of Michael Brown, and really, you know, pricked to consciousness, moved to organize and protest and make some real measurable change in the region. And I once went to, excuse me, a protest on the anniversary of Michael Brown's murder. And I met Jalian Yang there and we became friends. She wanted to create a podcast and we sat down and created it, and it did really well. It won St. Louis Magazine's number one for the City of St. Louis podcast. And it won a couple of prestigious grant awards from excuse me, the Arts and Education organization, and it's called Who Raised You? And we talk to artists, change makers, educators, activists, organizers in the region about family and ask them initially every interview, who raised you?
Why is that the grounding question?
You know, something about that question just really makes people go deep because the answer is always so much more than biological. People feel raised by their neighborhood, by the music they loved, by the clique they most associated themselves with in their 20s, by the academy, by their career choices, by their partner. It's just that question just really makes people think about what made us.
So it's definitely a question that sounds like you could ask that and then just let the interview go from there. I mean, do you even write other questions or do you just kind of let the conversation flow after that point? You know, like I feel like that's how you started yours. And then we ended up talking about you opening a library in Africa, and I'm looking at all my other questions that I wrote, like none of these are anywhere near as interesting as that.
So. I mean, you know, everybody says it, being a good interviewer is about listening.
Yes.
That's always so maddening to me. I don't know if you've had this experience where you watch interviews and they really are just propaganda for the person being interviewed, especially if they're famous.
Mm-hmm.
Because they say things that any other normal person talking to them would go, what? and follow up on that. But that's not what the interview's for. The interview's for them to promote their latest book or their latest album or their latest tour. And those are always the worst interviews.
Yes, I agree. They are definitely a challenge to listen to, because communication is all about that back and forth. And I hope it's okay if I now ask about your other podcast. So you have the podcast, The Memoir My Dad Wouldn't Write, right? Mm-hmm. Which I feel like is almost answering that question of who raised you. Did one result in the other? How did the other one come to be?
I actually think they did. What happened was, once Jalian and I created Who Raised You, I then understood what it took to produce a podcast. At the same time, I had this father in his 80s who was a Black Arts Movement poet, a professor emeritus, a Black man who had survived the United States,
right,
who had lived through all these movements, literary, social, and cultural, I also had the backdrop of other beloved people who had passed away without me recording them, without me getting their stories. And I just thought, no, I'm gonna do this with my dad. So the memoir My Dad Wouldn't Write is a conversation between he and I where we're talking chronologically through his life. But of course it goes off on tangents, lovely little tangents. It's just so fascinating. It's so fascinating to talk to any man who's lived that long about how they see us in the retrospect of having been here since 1937.
Do you find yourself being surprised during the recording?
I have been very surprised. And when you talk to someone about their life, you understand them so much more. And I know that this is such a golden opportunity, and for many of us, a rare opportunity, because maleness is kind of set up in our culture as something that you don't question. And there are so many people I meet who listen to the podcast who are like, I could never get my dad to reveal those things to me. And so it's really been a blessing to even talk to him about how he sees women, sexuality, friendship, all of those things, parenting, all of it.
Do you feel like setting it up in the format of a podcast is almost giving him that outlet or even that permission to say things that maybe our dads normally wouldn't say or wouldn't know how to say?
I think so. And I think, I mean, like any man, and even larger, like any human, he still has an ego. You know, there are some things that he's not even going to say on tape. But because of his advanced age, there's so many, you know, I'm not going to curse on here, but you know how they say after 50, you set the F words free.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He has so few of those left, right? When you get to his age, especially as a Black man with the statistics in this country, he's outlived so many of his friend group, his peer group. He's outlived every one of his siblings except for one.
Wow.
Yeah. No, two. He's outlived every one of his siblings except for two sisters. But there were nine of them.
Wow.
So at this point, the honesty level is just, it's much easier for him because he also has the hindsight of time to know that people, it'll be okay. It'll be all right.
And I think we all kind of need to hear that right now in the year 2020. Like, oh, you mean other times have been tough too and we're not all doomed to oblivion. Good to know. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Wow. So it sounds like so much of your life revolves around gathering the stories of others, but you yourself are also a storyteller, correct?
I am. I mean, I do it mostly through poetry, but I love stories.
Why is poetry the form that you tend to gravitate to for your own storytelling?
I was introduced to it in various forms very early on, and it always felt like the most comfortable way for me to express myself. It was the most comfortable art for me. Mm. Now, my mother was more of a visual artist, even though she did write as well. And so putting paint on canvas was how she kind of processed the world, along with other visual crafts.
Yeah, I've noticed that, creativity tends to find its niche in a person, right? Like my sister is very visual, you know, hands-on, makeup, cosmetology, paint, and I'm all about words. So I definitely understand what you mean by that. You've served as a teaching artist expert for the kiddos of YWSTL, not just as a podcaster, but also as a poet consultant, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Actually, right now I'm teaching some young ladies at a residential area residential facility. And what is the name of it? I'm teaching
Mary
for
Grove.
Mary Grove. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So on Saturdays in the morning, I come in on Zoom. And the theme of it is womanhood and personal power.
Wow.
So the last session, we wrote extended metaphors where they were encouraged to compare themselves to something positively. And so people were fire and heroes and joy. It was really wonderful.
What's it like to take a young person through that process of being able to tell their story through poetry, something that sounds like you've been doing your whole life? What does it require for you to almost flip that on its head and take it to young people?
Well, one of the things you have to do is you have to be an advocate of young people and you have to like them.
Hmm.
There are so many people who work with children and young people and they don't like them. It's the most bizarre thing. As someone who's taught for many years, I'm always surprised when I meet that person. I'm like, you really don't like humans. Mm. Like, you could have been a computer programmer. That is a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if teaching is the path of least resistance for people or what it is, but there are more people than I would like to admit who are involved in it who don't like, they don't like kids. One of the ways to get the best out of students is to like students and to be mm-hmm. genuinely interested in what they have to say.
Well, how do you then apply that genuine interest to your sessions with the kids? Like, how do you take what they're saying and then help them use that in their poetry?
Well, one of the things that I do is always kind of acknowledge they're in the room. For instance, last time we met, you know, I said, well, let's do a roses and thorns activity. Everybody go around and share with me a rose, something that was positive or they felt like you did well at. And then share a thorn, something you wish had gone better or something that you might call negative that happened. None of that is going to turn into a poem necessarily, but it's a way to build community and show that I care about the people in this place, and this is a time for us to lift up one another.
Almost priming the pump for like getting into those spaces before you write.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's as simple as asking people how their weekend was or, you know, noticing what people are wearing, all those things.
What's it like working with the Mary Grove ladies specifically? Because these young women have, from what I understand about Mary Grove, not had an easy life up until this point at all. What's it like working with them, maybe compared to other experiences you've had with groups of kids?
Well, the young ladies at Mary Grove are brilliant,
mm-hmm.
more often outwardly troubled. They're in that facility because they're in foster care, or some of them are even returned adoptions. Some of them have counseling and psychiatric plans that make it better for them to stay in a residential facility where they can receive the kind of structure they need. I will say that I have appreciated that everyone there is clear that they're growing.
Mm.
They mention their struggles, whether it is finding a job or transitioning out of school, dealing with, you know, negative thoughts or having regrets or feelings about homes that they were removed from. That's one of the blessings of working with therapeutic poets in a therapeutic environment, is that everybody is clear that that is what is happening. Whereas when you're in a school, people are more often to hide what is happening or to put other stuff, misbehaviors on top of it.
But these kids are ready to go to that place a little bit, perhaps more readily than kids who maybe don't go through that process as often.
Yes, I would agree. Yes.
I never thought about it that way, but that, I mean, I've worked with the kiddos at Mary Grove once or twice before, and I've noticed that too, how they are ready to go to that space with you. And it's such a gift to, you know, receive that from them and then to hopefully help them utilize it into something creative or powerful. So you yourself are a published poet, right? You have a collection work that, when did that come out? I know there's something out there. What do you have and where can we get it?
2015. It is called Chop, A Collection of Kwansabas for Fannie Lou Hamer. It's a book of poems centered around the life and activism of Fannie Lou Hamer, a Black woman from Mississippi.
I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yay. One of her signature quotes is, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So you can find that on Amazon. Just look up Chop Fannie Lou Hamer. Wow. And you'll find my book. And you can also find it on my site at femininepronoun.com.
Such an awesome name for a website, by the way.
Thank you.
You just have this incredible talent at naming things, I feel like all these.
You know what? You're not the first person that said that.
All your names are like, there's just this punch to them, but also this subtlety, right? It's like there's the initial like, oh, but then it's like, huh. Like there's like these double layers to it. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're so welcome. I'm just calling it as I see it, ma'am. I also heard that you might be willing to share a poem with us as we're getting ready to close up here, giving us the gift of words as it relates to your own work. Is that still on the table?
Of course, of course, of course. All right. Let me see here. What should I read? This one. I'm feeling something a little light, a little fun.
We need it on a dreary day like this. I like that.
Right. This poem is for women. It has three titles. Prescription, or For What Ails You, or Poetry on Demand. It starts with an epigraph. Right now, something to lift my spirits would be great. Something that reminds me that I can make it better for me. I hope I'm not sounding gloomy. Some days are just so busy that I lose myself in it. Let's talk more. And that was an email sent to me asking for a poem by my cousin. Sister, I need some poetry to hope my heart. I need my poetry to be non-addictive. I need poems. I need a quip quickly, a quote quarterly. I need something that will fit on a bumper sticker or a pen. Something I can read instead of a daily devotional. Something that will get them N-words at work off my back. I need a poem better than my vibrator, even better than somebody else's man. I need a poem that will go with a bad purse and stilettos. A poem, girl. A poem I can light during a long hot bath. A poem that smells like musk, lavender, and a hint of patchouli. A poem that smells better than the jacket he left in my closet. I need a poem that will keep me from getting pregnant. A poem that is hormone-free and pro-choice. I need a poem for Black girls who've considered tubal ligation when the pill wasn't enough. I need a poem that reduces the size of fibroids, and for God's sake, a poem that does not promote yeast. I need a jet black poem, a dangerous we shouldn't be doing this poem, a that was the best kiss ever poem, a ladies night drinks are free poem, a Jimmy Choo Choo 99% off poem, a baby, let me get that poem, a you don't look a day over 30 poem. I can still wear a belly shirt poem. Ben and Jerry's whole pint poem. Really bad romance novel thoroughly read poem. Mental health sick day off to shop poem. This outfit is so expensive, I hid the receipt poem. High school boyfriend seeing me and saying, I should have married you poem. Best gay boyfriend poem, end of the day, and I take my bra off poem, a peace poem, a healthy poem, but most of all a poem that will never make me cry.
Why did you choose that one? I hate that we're recording right now. Like, I just want to, like, sit here and just let it soak in. But I do feel like we need to wrap things up. Wow. Why choose that one for this moment?
I love to read that poem whenever I have an audience of women. And right now, you're my audience. That's a bonding poem. That's like,
yeah.
Whenever I read that poem for women, they're like, yes. Ben and Jerry's whole pint poem.
Yes. I'm like, it's touching on every one of the needs of my soul. I don't know how, but it's doing it right now. It's just fantastic. Oh my goodness gracious. Oh, I don't know if it's even appropriate to ask this now, but is there anything else you'd like to add to wrap things up with this?
You know, I did want to ask something about your words, STL.
Yes, ma'am.
Every time that there is a movement in this culture, whatever that movement is, if it's Cesar Chavez and farm workers, if it's Martin Luther King and, you know, racial justice, if it is women, the women's movement, there are smaller, lesser known, lesser funded groups that are not, you know, known by the larger populace, but over time, they do most of the work. Mm-hmm. A lot of the organizations that we think about, that we see on old video, black and white film, those organizations don't exist anymore. But the small engines, the ones that really, really work hands-on with community, they do. And Your Words STL is one of those small engines that I just feel is so, so valuable and will stand the test of time.
Wow. Thank you so much. That this has all been such a gift. Hashtag gift of words feels like an understatement at this point. I look forward to someday when it's brighter outside in terms of weather and viruses that maybe we can meet in person. Thank you for your time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Learn more about YWSTL at www.yourwordsstl.org. You can check us out on social media on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Your Words STL. Our intro sounds are by Joey Ferber, and these outro sounds are by Asia Berlin. Bye-bye.